Hello everyone, welcome to Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friends, the podcast where I speak to people much more interesting than myself. Please enjoy. Hello everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friends. I am joined by fellow podcaster and also stand-up comic, Marcus Keeley. Marcus, what's happening?
Hiya, how are you?
Greetings to you in your office where you're working from home. Sorry for making you sit in it for an extra hour.
That's okay. I do spend most of my day here now, whether I'm working or not, because I have the work computer, I have my actual computer, and I have the PlayStation in here. So this is pretty much the room I spend most time in. I think I even spend more time in here than I do in my bedroom sleeping. So this isn't much of a change for me.
If you you think you're going to hook up the hammock eventually and just never leave the room?
That is an option. The toilet is upstairs, but the back door is right there. So, I mean, I could feasibly turn my lifestyle into a bungalow lifestyle where I just stay in one room and just open the back door when required in both senses.
Yeah, if there's a grating out there at the back where the sink waste would go out into, you just push into that, it's fine.
Could do. I think the soil stack actually runs on the... It does, it runs on the back of the house. So I could cut a hole in that and then just... insert whatever effluent I have.
You've thought of everything.
I have done. I just need to go and buy a drill, but I don't know if I would risk going to any shops in the current climate.
Yeah, that's true as well. We have you on today to, weirdly enough, have you on the podcast to talk about a podcast. We'll talk about some other stuff anyway, but basically why I wanted you on here was because I've been really enjoying your podcast. You're doing the instant feedback.
Yes, I am. Thanks very much.
Which at present you're not doing because we need gigs. But have you a couple of wee sneaky ones hidden away that you can release while you're waiting?
Well, handily enough, I was quite lazy because I did have stuff from the end of last year just sitting on the hard drive. And the premise of the podcast is I go to gigs and record comedians on stage and chat to them before they get on stage and after they get on stage, and it started off as a kind of like, you know, experiment into, you know, the mindset of the performer, like a real wanky thing. Don't get me wrong, it's still quite wanky, but it's changed now where I will go to a gig, and if it's someone I haven't, you know, met before, seen or recorded before, I will sort of still talk to them about, you know, what are you doing today and what do you think of the crowd? It sort of ends up turning into like the football results where the comedian will say, well, we hope to go out there today and get a lot of laughs with the team, and then afterwards they'll, you know, break it down and go, well, this joke worked well, but this didn't so much, and I'll remember that next time. It's got to the stage now where it's me going out and having the chat with someone that I know, and there's a gig sort of happening, and it's ended up just mirroring what it's like to go to an actual gig anyway, where I'll just sit and talk crap with someone for a while.
Funnily enough, the analogy that I would have used would have been sports, what you came up with, which was basically what you hope to do, and then once you come off, it's like the after-game interview. Mm-hmm. Where it's, you've either had a stormer and you've got your man of the match award, or you're just despondent and don't want to talk to anybody.
I find that even if someone does have a bad show or a bad night, they are just as talkative as if they've done really well. And I've had a few people who have had like a few stinkers, and afterwards, after I've recorded chatting to them, they've been like, actually, you know what, that was an awful night for me, but I really enjoyed talking afterwards. It helped me sort of, you know, like calm down and sort of think about it a bit more. And I'm like, well, that's nice. It's sort of, it's almost like therapy, you know, for these guys. I'm just out there supplying the service to them. But yeah, it's good crack. And it's something that, you know, there's that many gigs happening now, and there's no real like recording or history of them. And I'm not going out to every single gig, but I think looking back on it in a few years, it'll be an interesting snapshot of the time. Where the, you know, like Monday night at the Pavilion goes every Monday night. So there's tons of those gigs that happen without, you know, not necessarily anything notable happening, but at least for some of those gigs, I'll have been there and recorded, and you'll know who was on at that night. So I think in the future, it'll be interesting to listen back to them. At the moment now, even sometimes whenever I go out to them and I'm talking to people that I know and I like, I'm still going, yeah, this is just a recording of people chatting. But I definitely think in the future, you look back, it will be, oh, it's kind of interesting to hear such and such from a few years ago, or where's that guy now, you know? Or
maybe, it's a little document of, yeah, Here's what that person sounded like, or remember that guy, he doesn't gig anymore, but here's from like his second ever gig.
Yeah. Or here's, you know, that guy's on the TV all the time. He was on that podcast. I'm basically trying to hedge my bets. It's sort of like when an artist dies and their work increases in value, then my podcast will have much more listeners once I die. That's what I'm hoping for. I think it's the best that any of us can hope for, you know, to have that sort of history to look back on.
It's probably a bit more of like an elaborate Murder, She Wrote plot where you murder someone you've interviewed and Jessica has to track you down.
I wouldn't put her through listening to some of the podcasts, to be honest, but it, you know, there could be some clues in there.
Where do people find the podcast? Or like, are you like me? I just put mine onto an app and it pretty much sends it out to all the bits and bobs, or did you automatically upload yours onto different services?
I went around the various services offering my hat to them. You can get it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and many other great podcast outlets. I have checked most of them and it does seem to be on there, even some that I didn't submit the RSS feed to. I think there's some sort of aggregators out there that just pull a podcast from obscurity and stick it on there. So I think it will be on most things. I think it's even on Google Podcasts or Google whatever, which isn't technically...
Yeah, I think it is. I've had one on there.
I don't think Google's technically, you're not supposed to have UK podcasts on there yet due to some licensing problems, but some aggregators put it on there. So happy days.
My podcast is on Google. I use Anchor, which is just an app which I can upload the file into, add intros, add music, all that stuff. It was pretty much because I didn't know what it was doing or how to do it. So I was like, well, this is an easy service. And once I put it up, it got me on Spotify, Google, Apple, Spreaker, Squawk Box or something. I don't know. I remember reading I'm available on like 8 to 10 places that you can listen to podcasts, and it's got the 3 or 4 big ones that most people have, which is like Spotify or Apple. So that's your paid subscription, or your I have an iPhone, or your it's on Google. Once you're on Google, you're everywhere. So
yeah, well, that's it then. Once you're on the big three, as me and you call it in the industry, you're pretty much sorted.
I don't think I've done very many big things in the comedy industry, but I've been still plugging away. I actually, you were gigging before me, and I've been doing it for 10 years now. So how long are you gigging?
What year is it? 2020. What day is it? Wednesday. Not that that matters. I just didn't know what day it was. Is it Wednesday? It is.
It is Wednesday.
So it's so hard to tell at the moment. The main thing is bins. And that's how I structure my life at the moment. It's been day 20.
Oh, I have to put mine out. Yeah, I have to put mine out tonight as well.
What are you putting out?
It's black bin and brown bin.
But the dirty bins?
The offerings in the dirty bins. But you then have built a load of IKEA furniture for the new house. So the blue bin's already full. So I'm buggered for recycling.
That's mine. It's going out tomorrow. And 2 weeks ago, I forgot to put it out. And I woke up fairly early. And Niamh said, oh, did you put the bin out? And I went, no. She went, oh, it'll be all right. And I was like, yeah, it's fine. Now it's just overflowing. So I really I need to do that after this. What was the question? How long have I been gigging? About since 2000 and either 7 or 8, 2007, 2008, I started doing, I was doing like performance poetry back in the day around that time or before then. And then when I went over to England to study, where I met Lorcan McGrain. I met him through doing comedy through like a university comedy club. So it would have been about then. 2008 or so.
So you kind of predate the modern comedy scene that I would have started into, which was like my first gig was in the Pav in, I think it was the end of February 2010, maybe start of March. So, but you guys obviously had already been gigging, because when I got there, I met guys like Graham, yourself, Rory Ward, and Lorcan as well. So that was kind of, and George and Adam.
Mm-hmm.
So they would have all come in with those people who had obviously done bits and pieces in different parts of the world, much as yourself over studying. So you've been gigging for this long. When did you come up with the idea for the podcast? Because obviously, or was this just come from you're having these chats with people when you come off stage anyway?
Mm-hmm. Well, the podcast. It was a fun idea, because I was just thinking, well, I'm kind of doing this anyway. But the difference is now I'm obnoxiously turning people away to stand beside some bins with a recorder and forcing them to talk to me. Whereas before, I just forced them to talk to me. But the idea for it was kind of knocking about. I started the podcast about a year ago, nearly a year. But it was sort of knocking about my head for about 2 years. And it's just a very typical, I really want to do this thing, but I won't actually do anything about it, and I'll just think about it for a while and keep my eye out in case someone else, you know, has a similar idea. And if someone else has a similar idea, I'll go, well, I can't do it now, so fuck that. Yeah, it was for a few years because I was quite into, you know, well, still am into various podcasts like Comedy Bang Bang and Adam Buxton and Richard Herring and all, and they're all interview podcasts. And I was like, oh, I would like to do something like that. And the format that it started off on, it's still heavily reliant on other people to chat to, obviously. I know there's, you can do like a solo podcast where you sit and talk for, you know, half an hour or whatever. I couldn't do that because I would end up boring myself to death. I'm not the type of person who can sit and just keep chatting no matter what without some sort of stimulus, you know. So the podcast is still heavily reliant on other people, but more so at the very start because I was like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. So I'll just grab, you know, nearly everyone at the gig, get them all to say something into the recorder and like slap it together and hope that it's all right. Whereas now I'm sort of getting to the point where there are loads of gigs, but I, you know, same as yourself, I'm sure you end up going to the same ones. So whenever I go to a gig, I go, well, there's like Robbie McShane, for example. I haven't had him on in a few months, so we'll see what his crack is. And the vast majority of the time now, we don't talk about comedy. It's just talking about whatever. And because you're talking to a comedian, you can be reasonably assured that it's going to be, you know, hopefully entertaining and a bit interesting.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, coming from as we talk about whenever gigs are finished, it's do you prearrange your interviews, or do you just kind of surprise the guys? Because I would probably have in the back of my head, if you arranged to chat to me after a gig, I think that would be the night I would die, or there would be like a pressure. It's like when you bring a mate to watch you for the first time and you die on your arse. Which I think everybody's made that mistake. When you're starting out, let's face it, you're not very good anyway. And I mean, after 10 years, I'm probably still questionable. But the time you invite your mate to come see you is when you're going to go on your face. So I would be worried that if you were going to have a chat with me after the gig, that's the night when it goes absolutely tits up.
Well, I would, especially at the start, I was very conscious of like, you know, putting people under pressure. There's some people who were like, podcast, aye, sure, whatever. Like, they don't necessarily care. They're like, aye, well, if you're going to be there, like... But for some of the people who are only starting or haven't done many gigs, the added pressure of like a post-match interview, you know, and the probably know in the back of their head, I don't know if this is going to be my night or it might be a bit shite, you know. And I've had to saunter up to a few people who, you know, have essentially fucking crashed and burned. And in the back of my head, I'm going, the last thing this person wants to do right now is talk to me. Especially, yeah, you know, like 20 minutes ago, I said, so what's your hopes for the night? And you're like, well, I hope I do well. And I have this bit that I think's really going to go fantastically. And then, it doesn't happen. And then I go, yeah, do you want to talk about that now? Do you want to break that down bit by bit? But I would tend to message, if I see it that a gig's on, I would message, obviously, the person who's running the gig and go, do you mind if I turn up and annoy your ex, essentially? And given that, you know, you would know most of the people there anyway. And I would just send him a message going, if there's someone specifically I want to talk to, I would send him a message going, can I grab you for like 10, 15 minutes at some point on Saturday or whenever it is? Whereas if it's someone who's been on the podcast before, someone I know reasonably well, I'll say to them, look, I'm going to be there on Saturday with my recorder. If you have anything you want to say or you just want to have a chat, sure, grab us, you know. So it's more about trying to sort of be a bit more straightforward with people who are unfamiliar to the podcast or me. Whereas the rest of them, it's kind of like, aye, lads, you can just pile on. We'll just talk shite when you're there, if you want to, if you don't want to. Or even with some people, because they've been on a few times, like Fraser, there would be specific things that they would do. Fraser's running feature on his appearances is he will call out another comedian. As if it's like some sort of, what do you call it, like a wrestling thing, or like, you know, what these videos that they go, you know, Darren Matthews, you've been doing comedy for a while and you've been down in Newry, and I think the time is for you to stop doing Newry gigs because blah, 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 blah. So Fraser will just like usually come up with an insane rumor that is clearly false and call out people. The last one he called out, Paddy McGahey, who's like the nicest guy in comedy, and he's like, oh, I have a real beef with Paddy. You know Paddy, he's been up to no good as usual. And he just will go on a big rant about this comedian. And I haven't had any of the ones he's called out yet message me or him, which just goes to show that they're very, very scared or don't listen to the podcast.
What one of the two? I mean, it's probably the scared thing.
It probably is.
Freezer's a frozen man.
Freezer's a scary man. You know, he used to go by a different name back in the day, and you know what to say about that.
On the run or at a tax bill? What are we thinking here?
Oh, definitely all of the above, I would say, in Fraser's case. Definitely.
Whenever you're interviewing people afterwards, as we talked about, whether they would want to chat to you or not, have you done many gigs yourself that you definitely wouldn't want to have a interview about afterwards? Because I think we all have. And the annoying thing is, something that I actually dislike about comedy is people are fascinated by when you do badly.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's high-fiving you whenever you have a stormer and you're like, oh, that went really well, thanks very much. People who don't do comedy are fascinated with what happens whenever, like, nobody laughs.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, what happens is I go home, self-harm, can't sleep for a few days, and then I rewrite the bit, but thanks for asking. So have you done many gigs like that yourself where you're just like, I would not want to interview myself after that one?
I've had plenty of bad gigs. I'm trying to think of any in particular where I'm just so despondent afterwards, where, like, I did a show last year, I think. It was like a show all about my relationship with France called Marcus Keeley's Wee Wee. And it was like a New Year thing where I was like, right, I want to write a show this year and put it on this year just to have it on and perform it and write it. So I give Graham Watson a shout and I was like, right, when can you give me a date for the Black Box? Are you doing it as part of, you know, Comedy Lab or whatever it is?
Yeah.
And he was like, ah, yeah, maybe something in, you know, like July or August. And I'm like, no, not by July or August, because by then I've lost interest in the idea entirely. So I want to do it sooner than that. And he was like, well, there's like, I've got a few like Saturdays or Sundays in March. And I'm like, March, happy days, no problem. An hour show, get it done. And Graham was like, are you sure? Like, is it all brand new? And I'm like, no, it's sort of like a compilation show. And of all the, because I'd noticed that I was doing over the years material about France and the French and going to Paris and stuff like that. And I was like, I've seen
some of those bits.
Yeah. And those bits have been going strong for 10 years. And then with the whole Brexit thing, and I was like, I know, let's get this show done. Let's get this show done. Like, they got Brexit done. And this was like I think this was like the original withdrawal date, which was the 31st of March, I think, or that might've been the second one. Before it was pushed back continuously. And so I was like, right, we'll have to get it done before this date. So I was like, right, I've set myself this guideline, this date, let's go for it. I did the show, I think it was, because it was the first time I performed it, it was over an hour, and it did go on a wee bit long, and there was some stuff in there I was like, completely untested, brand new, sandwiched in amongst the stuff that, you know, I've been doing for years and you would do well. I was like, yeah, this would be fine, just do that. Nah, the new stuff didn't land entirely well. And this was like quite near the start where I realized there was a bit where I was playing a video that lasted a few minutes, and I was sitting at the side of the stage and people were watching the video, and there was a few laughs, and I could just feel them looking at the side of my head as I looked at the video myself, and was going, we're like 10 minutes into the show, this is a long show, and most of the new stuff that I've written for it hasn't really worked very well. And I just remember sitting there the whole time going, I wish this video was 40 minutes long so I didn't have to get up again. So maybe after that, but then that's my own fault for rushing a show, an hour show with some, you know, it's probably about 40% new material. And then afterwards I went for a pint, and at that moment I was sitting there going, I don't know about that show. So probably that one, because it wasn't very interesting anyone talking to me afterwards.
Yeah, well, I mean, and as you say, that's an hour. So you can get up and try new stuff for 7 minutes, and it's like pulling the band-aid off. If it doesn't go well, you're just like, oh, it was painless enough. Just, 7 minutes, which feels hard. But an hour's a tough sell for you yourself.
Yeah. Just it was too much too soon. Because I've done the hour shows before and stuff, but, you know, usually I've spent more than, you know, 3 weeks writing them and testing stuff out.
Are you still including poetry in your work as well?
Not so much anymore. I do have a few poems in my back pocket, which I pull out as required, but not actively writing any more stuff. I would quite like to, because it's like anytime you listen, like I would be quite a fan of Bo Burnham. Obviously, he's a musical comedian, but he has a few poems and stuff as well. And just listening to that, I'm sort of like, yeah, maybe I should write a few poems. Or even I was listening to Teresa Livingston the other day, and I was like, fuck, Teresa's great. And I was like, maybe I should get in. Like, I'm not a musical person. I was like, man, I could write a few poems. I could get a good wee rhythm on the go. And on one of my episodes of Instant Feedback, I went to the Belfast Book Festival Poetry Slam, and I was watching them, and I was like, oh, these guys are really great. And because I came from that sort of background when it's before I started doing comedy, I was like, yeah, I feel like a real sort of history here, and I should get back into this. And I interviewed the winner of it on the episode, and I said, huh, you might have some competition next year defending your crown from me, say. And he was like, yeah, no problem, you should definitely do it. And I was like, yeah, well, I fuck it well then. What do you say? And I haven't written anything, but sure, everything's cancelled for the rest of the year, so he can rest safe for another year.
Until next year? Oh, it was supposed to be within the quarantine times, was it? Like,
yeah, well, sure, everything from, I think it was like April, May, June, around that time. Or maybe it wasn't. I'm trying to remember when I started the podcast. Started the podcast in July, so it was probably July or August. It might still happen, who knows?
Yeah. But, annoyingly so, I had planned at the start of my year that I would probably take July and August off for the new Sunflower Club that I launched. Mm. Don't need to worry about that anymore.
No, I was going to go to Edinburgh this year.
You're going to Edinburgh as well?
Well, it was, you know, I was supposed to, but it was, you know, just in February for like 3 days.
That's slightly different. I've been to Edinburgh as a punter long before I was a comedian. I went in like 2006 for a week. I basically just went on my holidays to Edinburgh, and I went to a load of shows while I was at the festival, but it was long before I even had an interest. I was still playing music in a band, so I was like, comedy? I enjoyed comedy, but I had no interest in performing it.
Mm.
Have you been over to Edinburgh to perform?
No, I've never even been over to Edinburgh to visit. I've not been there.
Beautiful city.
That's the reason I was going to go over. Niamh is a big Harry Potter fan, so she was like, well, we'll go over because J.K. Rowling lived there and took the inspiration for some of the settings and stuff from the beautiful architecture of Edinburgh. That hasn't happened. We've rescheduled it for September, but the hotel said, no, you can't have your money back. And we were like, oh, is it because of the coronavirus? And they said, no, because we mightn't exist then. So just keep the book
Grant.
On and hope for the best. And we were like, cool, dead on, no worries. So
that's a bit scary. All right, we'll see how we come out the outside of this. In regards to other things you've done, you used to run, was it Voicebox? Was your comedy?
Voicebox Comedy Club started life in Safe House Art Gallery, which was where the poetry nights were happening. One of the poetry nights, Make Yourself Heard, not Microsoft Word. If you say it quickly enough, it does sound like that, but that didn't put people off. They're like, oh, Microsoft Word, it's sort of like a pastiche on the program, but it's all about writing. And we're like, sure, yeah, whatever gets you through the door, that's fine. That was started by Colin Dardis, who's an excellent poet, who ran and emceed the poetry slam at the Book Festival in the Crescent. He still has a night there every month, purely poetry, where you can turn up and read out poems. Not happening now, of course, nothing's happening now. But Colin Dardis.
How did that lead to you actually running your own night where you were like, well, this is, if poetry already happens here, you ended up mixing the two?
Well, yeah, it was a thing where I was doing poems, and then very heartfelt poems, you know, that really spoke about my feelings and the world at large. And then over time, I started, you know, chatting between the poems a bit more. And giving them longer introductions, and then the poems themselves started to get a bit funnier and shorter, and then eventually it was like, yeah, I'm sort of more into sort of talking at the audience and doing sort of funnier things. And I'd entered a few poetry slams around that time as well, and as long as I picked and wrote funny poems, I got reasonably far. There was a few that I won, and I always felt a bit bad for the genuine poets, because it's like, oh, I won because people were loud when I got off stage, not necessarily the content, but whatever. So eventually I was like, maybe I'll put on a comedy night here, because at the time, I think the only comedy night was one that Paul Curry was running in the Black Box. And that had been sort of, I think, on and off for a few months around there. So I was like, oh, I'll do one. Oh, of course, there was the Empire as well, and like the Laughter Lounge, I think, over in the Odyssey. The Empire has been going forever, as you well know. And I was
93, I think it was.
Yeah.
I was supposed to do it actually in April. That's two of the gigs that I have had cancelled. Was I was supposed to be doing the Empire in April, and this Friday coming, I was supposed to be in the side studio of the Waterfront Hall. So that's a kick in the balls.
That's a cancelled. Or postponed or suspended or whatever they want to say.
Fuck knows, man. It's coming back. Same with my own night. Like, I'm running the Sunflower. Same with McCooey's down in Uri. I'm furloughed off my job as well. But to be honest with you, I just miss performing and actually just, you know, like, when you see your comedian mates as well, because you'd just be hanging out having pints. Like, usually anytime I see guys like Alan Irwin or Graham, it's usually you haven't seen them in ages, so we'll do the gig and then have wee beer after. It's kind of nice. It's a social life. It's a social life for people who don't have loads of friends.
Well, that's it. That's
comedians are weird people.
That's more or less it. It's like any time I would see like Lorcan McGrain, I was like, right, well, what can I book him in for and get him up, and then we'll do the gig, but then we'll fuck off and have a drink, and then that's sort of the main thing. Or even if anyone says, do you want to head out for a pint? You're like, why? What? Who's on? What is it? And you go, no, it's just, do you want to just go out for a drink? And you're like, well, I mean, like, I'm doing a gig next Friday. Could we meet then? Because it's just, it's like, you can't just go out. No, there has to be, what's the reason? It's not as if I'm sitting going, I fucking have to have gigs left, right, and center constantly. It's like, no, if I have maybe one or two gigs a month and I can have a drink at them afterwards, it's sort of like that will do me. I don't necessarily travel for gigs, because if I'm traveling to somewhere, it means, well, I'm going to do the gig and the gig's fine, but For me, it's more the people. I'm there to see my mates. But I think that whole, you know, doing comedy because you want to do comedy and you want to progress to the next stage and stuff like that, that with me sort of fell away once I started working full time and got a mortgage and did all the other, a car. You're sort of like, well, no, I think I'll just do gigs when they suit me and I'm not too bothered about, you know, who's doing what, or did you see such and such is on it, whatever. And it's like, a few years ago that might have annoyed me. I'm like, ah, fuck, he's on, fucking what a pile of shit. Now it's like, sure, you know, whatever, as long as I can I can do my gig or put on a show every now and then, I'm kind of like, yeah.
Well, I don't mind. I mean, I love traveling, so I pretty much have worked out that I think I might be traveling and using comedy as an excuse. Or it one facilitates the other. People be like, oh, comedy's my first true love. And I'm just like, I really love seeing new places and comedy lets me do it. Like, I was able to tour last year and I was all over the fucking world. It was great.
Yeah.
That was comedy that let me do that. So it still cost me money, but at the same point, those couple of gigs where you're getting that few pound all the time just kept you on the road. It was brilliant.
Yeah, well, that's the thing.
I think, like, I'm maybe doing that as well.
Just having, like, going to a place is fine, but like, yeah, but what's the thing? Like, what's the same with, like, going out for a drink, but what are we doing though? That's that type of thing. Like, any time that me and Eve would go to Paris, I would do a show or two while I was over there, and it was just kind of like, well, when I'm here, like, I may as well, you know?
Absolutely.
Nice saying that, we went to New York in January, and just out of, I had no intention of doing comedy in New York, but it was like, let's imagine, because it just couldn't be fucked, because it was the first time I'd went to New York and said, well, we kind of want to do various things. I don't want to, you know, hinge it all on also going to this. But I was like, let's imagine that I actually was looking to do it. And it was just like, there's a few websites that, you know, advertise open spots and free spots and all. And it was like, yeah, there's a gig in a coffee shop in, like, Brooklyn. It's at 3 p.m. You get 4 minutes, provided you bring two people and they buy a drink each and all this. And then there was other ones where it was like, yeah, you can get 5 minutes for $10 and all this. And I'm like, I'm not a comedy prostitute, but in reverse, I'm not going to fucking pay to play, like, you know? So that, it just seemed the grimmest fucking thing ever. Fair fucks to anyone who wants, but surely, like, all the people who would be sitting in the room or the other comedians waiting for their 3 minutes. You know what I mean? Like, I can't imagine there would actually be much of an audience on, like, a Thursday afternoon at 2 o'clock. There's going to be people sitting in a coffee shop going, yeah, we're coming to this comedy thing. And it's like, no, it'll be people just looking to get a coffee and fuck off. So it just seems like the grimmest thing. So fair fucks to the people who do that, but they also do seem mentally ill for pursuing that, because they will do that all afternoon, go from show to show to show, and say, hey, don't see the value in that at all.
Yeah, well, it's what people want to do to develop or whatever it is. But I think I did one over in London, and it was by pure chance. I was having a pint in a bar with a mate of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, there's a comedy night in here. I was like, what? I goes, there's a poster behind you. I turn around, he says, the barman, excuse me. I goes, is that the night? Guy goes, yeah. He goes, I don't know. There's a fella books it like, but he'll be here in an hour or two. I was like, well, I'm just going to stay here for an extra pint then. This was a great excuse.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, can't leave now. Got to chat to this promoter. And the dude was like, yeah, yeah, come back later on. And then it was actually like an upstairs room in a bar. And he goes, you can get up and do, you know, do 10 minutes. Everyone's doing 8 to 10. And I was like, yeah, sure. So I arrived down later on, and it was all just comedians. And I remember thinking, what is anyone learning out of this?
Mm-hmm.
You just load other comedians staring at you, not wanting to give you anything. And then the other thing was, once the first half was done, half the crowd left because it was the first half of comedians who'd been on, and they all just buggered off. So the first thing I said when I got up, and some of the quality was questionable to mentally ill.
Yeah.
You know, so I got up anyway, and I said, you know, I always thought that I wanted to do a gig in London, but you know the old saying, be careful what you wish for, because fucking here I am. And that got a big laugh, and I was like, oh, Jesus Christ. You can't even tell that I'm giving out here while trying to be funny. It was so strange. And then there was chatting to another guy who's from down south, but he lives over in London and works over there, and he was like, yeah, yeah, you can do this 7 nights a week. And I was like,
no thanks.
No, thank you. I'm gonna go home, because I live in a very small place where I can run two nights and have access to the network of people who know what the fuck they're doing.
Yeah, well, that's it. It's just, it's like, obviously when you go to a place or you go, well, I'm going to New York, and I'm going, you know, you can't expect, like, I'm going to rock up this club. I don't know anyone. No one knows me. I'll only do, you know, a gig if they give me 15 minutes and there's like 300 people in the crowd. It's like, well, obviously that's not going to fucking happen. But on the other hand, I'd rather just not do it if it's going to be, you know, 14 sad looking men waiting who are forced to stay until the end. That was some of the stipulations, or you must stay the entire show, you must buy this or that. It's like, this seems like prison more than anything else, and I'm not sure what people can learn from that.
I'm also not sure how this is conducive to an enjoyable environment where people want to have a good time.
That's not a show, that's a sort of a silent workshop that you are paying to stand. Fuck that. Like, I genuinely can't imagine anything worse. So I was happy enough not to do that.
But funnily enough, this connects me down to another point that I'd written down earlier on. I wanted to talk to you. And, well, two of the things. Number one was about your poetry. And I don't want to give away your bit, but one of my favorite bits that I've ever seen you do, and I've seen you do it a couple of times, going back a few years, was whenever you, I can't remember how you introduced it. It was basically you talk about a paper in your pocket. How do I do this without doing your fucking bit? And you pretty much, you introduced what the poem was to be about, and then essentially just had a breakdown on stage. I think it's one of my favorite bits.
Oh yes,
like, of local comedy.
My life.
My life. Yes,
that's a good one. I like to pull out when I'm because mostly I would MC or host of an MC like Accidental Comedy Club fairly often, and the odd thing in the Black Box. I much prefer MCing or hosting because there's a bit more room to sort of knock about and chat with the audience. And, you know, I do genuinely like the idea of going, right, folks, here's such and such, you know, he's great, or sort of, you know, just getting an audience ready and doing the best introduction for the actual act, as I like to call them. My life is something that I like to pull out every now and again once I go, yeah, I think I need to bump this up a wee bit, or, you know, just move the audience along a wee bit by completely slowing them down. And
I enjoyed my life. I couldn't think of how. I was like, how do I do this? How do I talk about your premise without doing your fucking punchline? And then the other thing was, you mentioned when you were over in New York, you used to do a character who was an American comic. Was it Oscar?
Oscar was from here. I retired him to America a few years ago. He's currently
an American style comic. Is that what it was?
Oh yeah, it was kind of like how would you
leather jacket and shades?
Leather jacket and shades. His style of comedy. I'm trying to think how you would describe it at the time, because there's so much of it around now, which is partially the reason why I stopped doing them, because just like a like not necessarily like dirty jokes, but very sort of typical, you know, like setup, punchline, as you say, like very Americanized. And it got to the point, once the scene started growing more, people were trying different styles, and it was sort of like, yeah, he is just becoming a lot of like people's genuine acts now, so I'll not do him anymore. But I've retired him to Las Vegas. He's in the the Pineapple. He's doing a residency in the Empty Coconut Comedy Club in the Pineapple Ring Hotel in Las Vegas. And okay. Mom's Net gave him 4 stars, so he's happy enough over there.
He's getting on okay.
He's getting on fine. He was going to come back for the Fraser of Vanity show.
Okay.
Just to make a brief appearance, but he lost his leather jacket and sunglasses, so he couldn't come in the end. But yeah, no, Oscar was good crack. Sometimes I do think about him every now and then and go, what, you know, how has Oscar changed now? Especially, you know, with like the Me Too movement and all that. Not that he was like a pervert. He was just he had the same sort of sensibilities as like a teenager who doesn't quite know what sex is. So he would end up saying like vaguely offensive things, which sound worse than they actually are. He just had a very basic misunderstanding of women, his own mentality, and just sort of would see other comedians and try and emulate their style without understanding what actually made them funny. So yeah, as I said, there was too many people actually like that, so I sent them off to Las Vegas.
Well, have you ever considered next time you're thinking about doing an hour, just write 35 and have Oscar do the opening 15 and then take a wee break to go get a pint?
I had thought about that. I think Lorcan McGrain had done that. I think he did a show where he came on. Lorcan does many, many characters that involve him in various states of undress or overdress. And I think he supported himself as a character on a few of his shows. And a show that I saw a few years ago, I saw Viper Higgins in the Black Box. And
I was at that, yeah.
He introduced himself as...
the wee old man with the pinty Guinness.
The slug. So that was quite fun. I do like the character elements, because a lot of that was part of voice box. Usually I would try and get, you know, one act who was doing a character who would either be doing a character piece or a character who would come on stage and sort of interrupt me or sort of interfere with the running of the night. And I had a few good nights that way, because it added like there's almost like a secondary story. Like the main thing is supposed to be like there's a gig on, comedians are going to get up, let's bring your own, you sit down, you enjoy the show. And then there was like a secondary strand going on in the background where this character, usually like Aaron Marshall or Caitlin Magnell Kearns or Kieran Majuri, would interrupt me, and sort of we would have like this constructed story or banter, and sort of would, you know, it'd be like a narrative theme of the evening. So if you weren't interested in the acts necessarily, you still had this like secondary drama story happening running alongside it. And then that's
soap opera of the actual performance.
Yeah, and Darren, that's what really made it theater.
I think the only theater I've ever done was an amateur dramatics thing that my mum was in. But there you go.
We did
Grease in school. We did a Sam McCree play with the Bessbrook Players when I was about 11. Basically a farce set in Ireland called the Queer Gunk, where two bachelor brothers, one of them fakes his own death and has a wake to see what everyone thinks about him. And, oh, hilarity ensues. So, it was good fun. And then we did Grease when it was in school. So that was my first proper introduction to the stage, which I've mentioned on the podcast before, which was reading at mass.
I've done a few of those.
A captive audience.
I've done a few of those. I remember doing a thing in Clonard. There was something to do with, like, I was wearing robes and... you had to do like some sort of weird rehearsed movement thing to music. Can't remember what it was. It seemed a bit occultish, but all the adults loved it. Got rave reviews at the end. I can't. Probably something to do with Easter. Who knows? So, rebirth. Yeah,
I had a small part in the Easter. Is it the Passion? Is that the Easter play? Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, where they get up and obviously the priest gets to be Jesus because. He's the director and the, you know what I mean, star. Fuck him. I got to be crowd. My mum was usually the narrator, and then I got to be crowd. So I had to stand there for about 25 minutes like a dickhead, and every once in a while I would get to say, crucify him.
Were you the entire crowd? Were you the entire crowd.
It's actually written in the thing as crowd.
Oh, so you're embodying many angry Jews?
Yeah. Not Jesus. Barabbas. Release Barabbas. Why do I remember these things? That's like brainwashing shit.
What happened to Barabbas after?
I don't know. There's I hear HBO are doing a documentary though about him. So we'll see what happens to him after that one.
Something in the back of my head makes me think he turned a new leaf or something and like became, well, not Saint Barabbas, that's too much, but I think he sort of went, fuck me.
That was lucky one. Like,
should have been me. You know, survivor's guilt, that's where it came from.
Barabbas.
Barabbas
the
syndrome.
The original and best in the Bible.
Yeah, that's it.
There's another idea as well for the podcast. We can probably tie this in a loop before we wrap up. If you're going to do instant feedback, if Oscar ever gets back from Vegas, see if he wants to chat with you.
That could end up being quite an insane afternoon. I certainly
don't let anyone see you doing it, but
no.
See if Oscar wants to chat with you, and if he's being difficult, just take him for a pint and get blocked.
Well, that's it. I might.
He likes beer and girls, like, so.
Oh yeah, beer and girls, and what else does he like? Cheeseburgers, and he loves to buy a kebab at the end of the night. And the best thing about buying a kebab when you're drunk at night is that you can vomit it up in the street after you've eaten it because you've been so drunk, and it's hilarious. So, and it also makes you look really hard. So, or what you can do is save it until you get in a taxi and then book all over the taxi, because that's what real lads do. Am I right, lads? Yeah. I have a girlfriend. So yeah, it's fine. Yeah. Let's do that. I don't know if we can.
That's the predominant line I remember Oscar doing was, I have a girlfriend.
I have a girlfriend. Which
is, it's sporadically in the middle of nothingness to do with what he was talking about. Yeah, I have a girlfriend.
As long as people know, you know, I have a girlfriend, so I don't know if we could. I don't know if we could talk to him for more than 10 minutes. But I
wanted to smash your own head off the wall.
Yeah, pretty much.
Get out of my brain.
He hasn't grown much since then. But he's very popular with the older crowd in Las Vegas. You know, he mostly does the 2 to 4 slot. You know, just before bedtime. So
does the blue rooms, like?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the blue rinse rooms. That's for sure. But yeah, I don't know. I might get him back. I also would like him to expire. I don't know. Would that be too harsh? I don't know. He's not doing anyone any harm. He's not real.
I mean, he's you're gay, so it's fine. It's up to you. But coming from the point of view of the podcast, obviously we need gigs to restart so you can make more, so you can keep releasing them. I'm trying to record more of these than I need, so I can eke them out as well. But because I need gigs to restart as well, but I'm not just talking to comedians on this podcast. I've been on to actors, and I've got like a lady coming on who's like a downhill mountain biker. So it's just things a bit apart from, because then obviously every podcast becomes what I'm talking to you about, which is that tell me about a time you died in your arse. Go on.
Oh, go on. Well, that's the thing. I don't have anything left, Darren. I don't have any backlog at the moment. I've got a few ideas about people that I can talk to in these trying and uncertain times. Not necessarily comedians. Like I've had a few actors on, and I've had writers, or I've had people on who pults, people who I just like, and I go, you know what, I'll probably get a good conversation out of them, because quite honestly, like who can be fucked going to comedy gigs? You know, like I go through a spurt of them where I'll go, right, well, there's this gig on, then there's this, and then there's this. I'll go to those, and then I sit down, listen to them, and edit them, and release them, and I go, fuck, I don't really want to go to another comedy night for a while. So then I'll sort of turn.
What you should do is on the nights you're on, because obviously then you have to go, just interview everyone else on the bill, and that's like a month's worth of podcasts.
I just break it up bit by bit. I could do that. Just do character profiles.
Here's 6 minutes. Enjoy that while you're having a shite. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's it. Six minutes.
Depends. Maybe you've had a coffee. You know what I mean?
I don't know. Is that long or short? I can't tell.
I don't know. I think it depends. It's personal preference. Time stands still.
Time has no meaning at the moment. You know, we could have done this on the toilet.
It really does that way. I appreciate that you haven't, because it's a video call. So thanks very much.
No worries. I would keep it all above board. But no, I have a few.
The waist.
have a few people I want to talk to specifically in relation to the podcast who mightn't necessarily be comedians. So I will get on to that and, as you say, eke them out every now and then. I might try. I know I said earlier on I couldn't do a solo podcast and talk, but I might try it because I've got into a real habit recently of pacing up and down the back garden because I don't like going out for walks because there's too many people. There's more people out walking now who never would have fucking left the house before this. Now they're like, oh, I have to go for my walk now. And you're like, just fuck off. So I'm lucky enough to have a garden, so I quite like to pace up and down there. So I might do a pace episode where it's literally me just talking shit for half an hour. People are going to love it. So yeah. Could just do that. I don't know. I'll do something. Like,
well, I find myself either walking early in the morning or late at night or basically any time when the place isn't full of people. So
exactly.
I just usually listen to a podcast and go for a wander. So if we want to listen to your podcast when I'm out on my wander, where do I find you? I mean, we talked about where the podcast is listed and stuff, but what about your stuff? Are you on Twitter? Have you got the Instagram? Are you doing the TikToks?
I am not doing the TikToks. I tried.
Me either. I don't know how to do it.
I deleted the app after 20 minutes. It was fucking horrific. I'm on, you can find me on Twitter at Marcus Keeley, which is just my name. The same for Instagram. You can get me on Byte, which is like a spiritual successor to Vine, which is better than TikTok. I'm on that as Marcus Keeley. You can find the podcast on Facebook by searching Instant Feedback. You can find it on Twitter at @IF_pod. If you just put Marcus Keeley into any of these sites, I'm probably on there somewhere, but those would be the main ones.
How many Marcus Keeleys can there be?
There is one who lives in Dungannon.
Fair enough.
No, well, Warren Point. He lives in Warren Point.
He's in the Point. That's close to where I'm from. Yeah, I'm from.
Go and have a word with him. Go and have a word with him because I heavily suspect he is using my email address to sign up to various things, thinking it's his email address, but it's actually fucking mine. I keep getting emails about Penguin Club or Club Penguin, whatever the fuck it is. So if you could have a wee word with him, that would be appreciated.
Is that like the Blue Oyster Club and Police Academy? Is that what sort of club he's going to? Or we don't know. We don't want to accuse anybody of anything on the podcast. Like, this is libel. We're recording it.
Well, there's more than one Mark Skilly, so I can just say, it was me he was talking about. Don't worry about it.
Fair enough. Yeah, I found the thing where I have to be specific when I'm telling people mine. So, you know, like the Instagram's Darren Matthews Comedy or the Twitter's Matthews Darren, because there's actually a more famous Darren Matthews. Well, there's two guys on Spotify when I went looking for my own podcast to send somebody a link. There's a guy who's even got my fucking middle initial. There's a Darren J. Matthews, who's a singer-songwriter, and his album's not bad. And then Darren Matthews is actually the real name of professional former WWE wrestler William Regal.
All right. Well, there you are then. That's
from Blackpool in England. And I was like, well, fuck's sake, nobody else called Darren but anybody between the ages of, I'd say, about 28 to 45.
Yeah.
And here's one who's been on TV for fuck's sake.
Well, that's too bad. I just have other Marcus Keeley, so if you try and use my email for things.
Well, at least we'll be able to find you for your podcast. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you've enjoyed this podcast, like, share, and subscribe. And by all means, please do go check out the Instant Feedback, which is Marcus's work. And we'll see you at a gig, I suppose, in fucking 2022 or after the zombies. We'll think of something, will we?
Aye. No, we'll meet up and have a real life chat beside some bins. Doesn't that sound good?
Dead on. We can either do the beside the bins thing or we can just go on to get a couple of pints of stout instead. I'm happy with either or, really.
Dead on. I'll see you then.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, Marcus, everybody, thanks for listening. Marcus, say goodbye.
Goodbye, folks.